This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Spitfire by B.J. Allen. As a young pilot in Britain from the outset of World War II, he knows the phony war can't last forever. Soon it will consume the world in a fight against fascism.
London, 1940.
What General Vagon has called the Battle of France, the Battle of Britain, is about to begin.
Historic souvenirs. Excerpts from the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen.
Speedbird salutes the Fuhrer.
As a young pilot in Britain from the outset of World War II, he knows the phony war can't last forever. Soon it will consume the world in a fight against fascism. Having crossed the English Channel to patrol high above the beaches of Dunkirk, the Spitfire fighter is straying far over the border of Belgium, pursuing one of the enemy aircraft, which escapes unscathed thanks to the pilot's brilliant manoeuvres. It's time that the British aircraft turns back to resume its patrol over Dunkirk, rather than pitch battle above Belgium, a nation that fought bravely when Germany attacked it, against overwhelming odds. 18 days the Belgians resist the invaders, until King Leopold III surrenders to the Germans, who take the Belgian king as prisoner of war. Not all Belgians accept King Leopold's surrender, so seize the chance for many of its military to escape with the Allies' evacuation of Dunkirk. No hint of these dark days in Belgium's history shows at ground level as I dive low, shattering the once peaceful countryside. I try to spot signs of Germans or of our own troops, but see none. From this low level, the only living creatures I see, cattle browsing in fields in an otherwise deserted rustic scene. The sandy coastline looms ahead. I see empty villages. Then khaki-clad figures waving from the dunes, British, French and Belgians on the front line, with that huge, ugly black pall of still-burning fuel tanks hanging like nightfall above, drifting slowly out to sea. I call in the RT for the section to rejoin our formation. Faintly I hear a pilot respond with his position, but can't quite get the message. As the time comes for our patrol to end, it seems all the action is over. Unbeknown to me, two of our Spitfires, last to rejoin our formation, are then still waging war. Our pilots spot enemy aircraft above. Next I see a Dornier fighter bomber, reputed to be the fastest of propeller-driven aircraft, go aflame like a comet on its long dive to the English Channel, its howling engine filled in a huge cascade of white foam. Witnessing destruction of the enemy like this must be music to the ears of Allied troops being cramped and vulnerable on dunes and foreshore around Dunkirk. Finally, our skies clear of enemy aircraft. The fuel's only sufficient to take us home, home to England. A shower, change of uniform, a beer before turning in, ready for an early take-off if weather conditions favour flying tomorrow. To clear up one issue before our next mission, I draw aside the pilot last to rejoin our formation over France. I demand to know, why didn't you join up again when I told you so? I must have had the RT switched off, sir. He grins slyly. I tell him he's a liar. I can't suppress a smile. You know perfectly well you heard me call up. His grin grows wider, whereupon I add, actually, it was a good show, you're getting him like that. But you obey orders in future. He's still grinning as we say good night to each other. Good night. We wake to an overcast sky, made the more dull by thundery-looking sky between the cloud base at 5,000 and up to about 10,000 feet. On our recent missions, we suffer from two unfavourable factors. Our fuel tanks last no longer than an hour aloft, and the enemy almost always outnumber us. This time, it would be different. For the first time, we're patrolling three squadrons together. This is to counter the Luftwaffe's new policy of stronger escorts for its bombers. Based on the same aerodrome, our combined squadrons take off on May the 28th, 1940, to form up and cross the English Channel on course for France. Carefully observing the cloud cover, we see in its changing form a fantastic ravine open up. Our leading squadron dives to take advantage of the gap. Though we attempt to follow its example, we don't know where it's disappeared, but we chance on a tempting target instead. Emerging from the towering clouds into clear space, we catch sight of fighter aircraft engaging in a dogfight. When we spot them, we're slightly behind and lower than the enemy. One of our squadrons peels away to join the battle, leaving ours to circle the edge of this cloud arena to gain height without, at this stage, actually engaging. Now we have the height to go in, just as five Messerschmitt 109s dive from the cover of cloud, then another five, and still others engaging in combat. I estimate 60 of them all told against our dozen Spitfires. One Messerschmitt crosses in front of my cockpit, so my turn puts me on his tail. I glance in my mirror to see another enemy aircraft coming round to behind. I'll have to be quick on getting the one in front before the other catches me behind, I think. I've the first Messerschmitt in my sight, so press the firing button. The guns fire, but spasmodically and too slowly. My mirror reflects the terrifying sight of an enemy lined up, about to deal me death from behind. I half roll, put my Spitfire in a dive, reaching 400 miles per hour. I gradually ease back on the joystick, feeling my eyelids and head grow heavy as the centrifugal force presses me deeper in my seat. Now I am out of the dive, soaring upward, up over the top of the black cloud bank as it drops out of sight below the nose of my aircraft. It's at the zenith of the now vertical climb, so I watch the clouds on the opposite side, coming slowly down to meet the nose as the Spitfire comes over on its back, its loop now complete. Then I ease the joystick forward and to the right, rolling us over to the right way up. Now I'm to one side of the dogfight. I try to find why my guns gave out. A gauge in the cockpit shows 80 pounds pressure in the compressed air bottle that's supposed to make the guns work. No wonder they won't go properly. That's not enough pressure. Perhaps the Spitfire took a bullet that's nicked a pipeline, causing a pressure leak. A Messerschmitt spots me and turns to meet the Spitfire. tracer streams just underneath my starboard wing. Not a bad shot, as the Spitfire makes a rather awkward target from where he's coming. I turn hard to the left as we pass, slowly bringing the Spitfire around on his tail. The Messerschmitt breaks suddenly from its turn, offering me a fleeting shot, but as I press the firing button, my guns only send a single bullet speeding on its way. I try again in vain. The guns won't work. I dive into cloud, flattening out below cloud at 2,000 feet. Checking the time elapsed since we first encountered the Germans, it's only gone 5 minutes. Suddenly I see approaching 3 twin-engined aircraft. If they're Hunkels, I'll look at Twerp without weapons. As we come closer, it's reassuring to identify them as ours. Antons of Coastal Command, based in Britain. My sigh of relief is overtaken by alarm. They align astern, forming a tight circle. They don't recognize the Spitfire. Rocking my wings to show their rondels, I'm surprised they seem so suspicious still as I skirt their formation to keep on course for England on my own, while the Ansons resume their mission. As I climb out of my cockpit, my crew comes over.
Did you get anything, sir?
No, not a bloomin' thing. There's no air in the bottle. Must be leaking. Only fired about 20 rounds before the guns petered out. Grimacing their disappointment, the crew set about checking the air system. I'm one of the first to come down from the mission. The others come in till all are returned. Good show. No one missing. As soon as we land, the NCOs and crews set about their task of inspecting and testing the Spitfires to find any faults to remedy before the next mission. The damage to mine is not serious. For 2 fruitless days, we're waiting for the weather to improve. On June 1st, 1940, I stagger downstairs for tea and biscuits because cloud is clearing, making a mission possible. It's 3:15 in the morning. Within the hour, I'm out on the tarmac to the thunderous tune of Merlin engines. The revs rising in crescendos of reassurance. They're ready to do their job. So crucial to our survival that they perform to expectations. We hear them well enough, but not see them more than as dim shapes marked by blue flames from the Spitfire's exhausts as they stab the dark in the half-light. Assured everything is in order, I climb to the cockpit, still dazed with sleep. Oxygen supply. Okay. The RT on? I taxi out to the far end of the aerodrome, turn into the wind, and sit there, yawning as other aircraft form up around mine. Thumbs up from each section leader, that indicates we're all ready. So I wave my hand over my head, the signal to take off. A roar surrounds us, cutting off sound from the outside world. As we gather speed, the bumping on the ground diminishes. With the final bump of the undercart, we defy gravity and a green tinge of grass slips away beneath us. My right hand drops onto the undercart control to move it back, rewarding my motion with 2 distinct but faint thuds. I confirm they're up with a glance at the cockpit indicator. I reach behind me to pull the hood shut. Changing hands on the joystick, I close the radiator, put the air screw into course pitch, throttling back to cruising revs. I then glance at the rev counter, boost and oil gauges. All's well. As I turn left round the drome, the mirror reveals the rest of our squadron formed up behind me. Three circuits, and the other two squadrons are in position. Straightening up, we climb away towards Dunkirk and the rising sun. Ours is the dawn patrol. As we're crossing the English coast, we circle to be joined by a fourth squadron of Spitfires as prearranged for the rendezvous. It's a formidable force. 48 Spitfires looking for trouble. It's there, all right. Beaches packed with people who, from above, look like at Blackpool or Margate on bank holiday. We fly over hundreds of small craft, plying offshore, ferrying exhausted troops to a host of bigger vessels, hove to farther out. All kinds of craft we may recognise here. Thames barges, lighters, rowing boats, lifeboats, in fact, anything that floats. Stretching back to the cliffs of England, an unending stream of ships trafficking in an angelic deliverance from Nazi forces to the comparative safety and peace of our islands. The humans who fight for and richly deserve a better and decent life, if they can but survive the Dunkirk evacuation of 1940.
Thank you. There's no need to take cover when you hear these engines sound. British planes are in the sky, ways on their daily vigil bound. We'll make one of their number, write our name upon the wing. When the planes are flying over, you will hear all Britain sing. There's music in the sky. Don't you hear the engines humming? Prepare to do or die. The British planes are coming. Steadfast, reliant. Spitfire or defiant. So give a rousing cheer. The British planes are here.
Spitfire by B.J. Allen, printed in Britain by Butler and Tanner. Publisher's note: the proofs of this book had to be passed for press subsequent to the author's departure for service overseas, 1942. We invite you to join us again next week at the same time, same station, for another edition of the story which is based on the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen, a book printed and written during the war, 1942, and subject to censoring that hides the identity of places and people. Nevertheless, the book Spitfire by B.J. Allen is faithful to the sequence of events that surrounded the unfolding of the evacuation of Allied troops in World War II from the beaches of Dunkirk. Till then, enjoy your week. Cheerio.
علاش هكداك الزوالي ما تدومش داوي لابطي تعلمو كتب لي ما يدومو الايام ولا يدوم صغرك وصغري يا حليل ومسكين اللي خاب سعدوك يخهري
يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شحال الغافلين قبلك وقبلي يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شحال ندموا لعباد الغافلين قبلك وقبلي.
وصيتي بيها قلبك ريه شوف ما يصلح بيك قبل ما تبيع وما تشري يا نايم جاني خبرتك ما صرا لك أسراني هكذا راد وقدر في الجبين صبحان العالي
يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شحال ندموا العباد الغافلين قبلك وقبلي
يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شحال ندموا العباد الغافلين قبلك وقبلي يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شحال ندموا العباد الغافلين قبل منك وقبلي.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.